Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I'm your host, Ken the Moment. You are listening to the My View Matters Radio Network. The sound's acting a little funny again, but at least we got it to turn down. That's always plus. Tell you what, it's always something new. But thanks for joining us tonight, folks, on a Father's Day edition of the My View Matters Radio Network's Liberty Unbridled show. And got a handful of things lined up for tonight, but wanted to start out saying Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. And for those that don't know, I became a father for the third time here about 7 months ago. And so definitely enjoying my kids. My oldest is going to college next year. So he is going to Northern, and really interesting times. It's interesting being a father, especially with one going into college and one in diapers. But again, Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. And I guess that's pretty much all you can say about that. I hope everybody who is a father or isn't a father had a good day today. And I got to clean out the garage today for Father's Day. So I hope others had a much more relaxed Father's Day than I did. So I have a handful of topics on the agenda tonight, and I apologize in advance. You know, what they always say in radio, and you never really know this until you do a show, it literally takes about 3 hours worth of time to show prep each hour of time on a show. And it's pretty amazing how much time it really takes to prepare a show and get things ready to go and to bring you the show. And so I had about 2 hours today, so we'll see how this goes. I was busy cleaning the garage, as I mentioned, and suddenly realized it was after 5 o'clock and I needed to get a move on and get ready for the show. So with no further ado, I guess we'll get right into it here. The first thing I wanted to talk about tonight, the city of Lexington, I was reading the Lexington Herald Leader, and the city of Lexington put forth a budget, and the budget, the mayor had given them, the city council then added an additional $2 million on top. And there's some interesting statistics here. So revenue for the city is expected to grow by less than 1%. It's about 0.8, 0.9% of what they brought in this year. Yet they plan on giving the employees raises, which I'm assuming is a 3% raise. They're also planning on they're planning on purchasing some development land and giving funding to a number of different programs and things, some of which are, you can make an argument, are good, but some of them are just silly, and some of them are definitely not necessary right now, given the prolonged economic decline that we've been on. It's amazing to me. I remember 2 or 3 years ago now, there was a big debate in Lexington over, oh my gosh, how are we going to pay for these pensions? And there was a big to-do about the pension system. And I do know that in the near future, there's going to be a requirement for an increased contribution for their employees to the retirement system. And I guess what's interesting is that that doesn't seem to faze these folks on city councils and county commissions and county fiscal courts. They just continue to spend, and they continue to add more onto the budget. One of the things in Lexington, they borrowed an additional $1 million, and that adds $70,400 in annual debt service to the budget. So basically, every year now, $70,400 is going to pay off the $1 million that they borrowed this year. There comes a point where you're borrowing so much, and we see this in the country now, in our nation, that we've borrowed so much money that a large portion of what is spent every year is just paying the service on the debt. And the sad thing is that we're not even paying off the debt. We're just paying the interest on the debt, and that we're still accruing new debt. And that is not a path to success. When at some point we're reaching the point where we're getting ready to start borrowing money to pay just the debt service, and that's when you know it's all over, when you have to borrow money to pay for the money you've already borrowed. Boy, that's not good. that's when things get really ugly really fast, because creditors become less likely to give you the money. You need the money more, so you're willing to take a higher interest rate, and it just is a downward spiral from there. So, you know, I use Lexington as an example only because it was in the paper, and because it was it is one of the bigger cities. It's our second largest city in the state, and I really don't believe that these cities have any intent of dealing with the pension problem. I think they look to the state to solve it rather than realizing that what's going to come out of this is that they are going to have to pay more into the system, or alternately, all of us, all citizens of the state, are going to have to pay higher taxes to the state in order to pay off these obligations that we have for the pensions. And that's not going to help either. That's still more money coming out of your and I's pocket that, you know, the city wants to continue to generate revenue. Well, there's only so much you can get out of somebody. I mean, at some point, the taxes are so high that people will break and they will have to move out of those higher tax rate areas. It's time for the cities and the counties and the state and really the country to get serious about this debt problem. And it's time to really start focusing on what is the proper role of government and what is it that we need. What are the real needs rather than the wants, the needs of the people that these governments are supposedly serving? Certainly, building yet another park or yet another project is not a need. It would be a nice to have, but we're all alive and we're all going here. And any project that can be put off should be put off until better times, at least. It makes no sense to continue to create higher debt burdens for ourselves and for our children. That's what the Tea Party movement was originally all about. And I think it's just as true now as it was in 2008 when the Tea Party's formed, that we're spending too much money on things that don't matter, on things that don't serve the majority of the public, and it's not good. And we're going to have to pay for it someday. There is no such thing as a free lunch. So moving on from that, one of the other things, failures of the state, we've been having this redistricting issue that's been going for, a couple of years now. They were supposed to redistrict last year, and they failed. The courts reversed the map that was passed. And this year they didn't even seem to bother. The Democratic House put together theirs. The Republican Senate didn't even bother. There's a special session that's supposed to be called here. About 6 days ago, there was a story that said it was supposed to be within the week. So I assume we're going to hear about this tomorrow on Monday when we will have this special session. We should hear about this week. I don't think they were serious about it, even on the special session, until the two lawsuits were filed. So some folks up here in Northern Kentucky filed a lawsuit saying, hey, redistricting, anyone? We need that. We're underrepresented in a lot of areas up here in Northern Kentucky because we have grown faster than the rest of the state. Meanwhile, the ACLU filed another suit a few weeks later, and they are specifically asking for a 3-judge panel to just do the redistricting. And so between these two lawsuits, I think that's what finally got the governor and the legislators off their butt and made them realize, oh, they're going to really make us do this redistricting thing. There have been some calls, and I've heard this from a number of different groups, about redistricting, forming a nonpartisan redistricting process. Now, in the state of Kentucky, we don't have this, but other states do. They have boards that do redistricting and all of that. The problem, I mean, ideally, it sounds great. You have an independent board that all they do is redistrict, and they ignore the political lines, and they just do the right thing. And honestly, if that would work, I'd be 100% for it. I think that it is far too political, and there is far, far too much put into protecting incumbents of the party in charge of a particular chamber. and not enough importance placed upon really actually serving and representing the people of this state. The problem I see with this whole notion or idea of an independent board is who appoints the board? And that's what I really don't know. Who would appoint this board? At the end of the day, if it's anyone who's in an elected office, they're going to be it's going to be very political, right? I mean, if you leave it up to Republicans to appoint some people and some Democrats to appoint some people, well, those two groups have a vested interest in appointing people that have or that will work to protect the interest of those who they were appointed by. And I don't know any other way for a board to be appointed. I guess we could create some board that we could elect. So, and that would be kind of interesting, a nonpartisan board of election type thing. But even in our judge races here in Kentucky, where that is the case, you know, it's still very political. We still have Republican judges and Democrat judges, and it is a very, very political process. And so I don't know how you come up with a nonpartisan independent board for redistricting. I think the key thing to beat the drum on here is holding our legislators accountable and making them do their job. We have a process laid out in our Constitution. The General Assembly is supposed to be doing the redistricting after each census, and we should have had this done 2 years ago. And it probably wouldn't be a bad idea to have the General Assembly possibly even figure out a way to pass multiple plans, with the idea being that if a judge strikes the first one down, then the second one automatically goes into effect, or something like that. I don't know exactly how you could pull that off, but there has to be a way. I mean, this isn't like some new one-off thing. We do this every decade. And what's funny is a lot of these guys in the House and the Senate have been around since the last one. I mean, it's not like this is some new, oh my gosh, we've never done this before. We don't know what we're doing. They know what they're doing. My understanding, based on, and if you're not familiar with how it works in Kentucky, our Constitution still goes back to a time before one man, one vote. And the Constitution says that we can't cut counties into pieces. And we used to do everything by geography, so it's a certain number of square miles per representative. And after one man, one vote, and the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act and a number of other laws were enacted, the state of Kentucky did not originally comply with these laws. And it was a lawsuit filed in federal court, and the state of Kentucky lost and was told, you must redistrict. And Kentucky said, that's fine. Hey, it's 1967 or whatever it is, 67 or 68. And they said, listen, we'll take care of it after the next census. We're going to do it right after the next census. And the court said, that sounds great. You know, we're not going to put a burden on you to redo all this now just to have to do it again in a couple of years. That's fine. We'll let you slide for now, but you have to fix this next time around. So 1970, 71 come and go. 72, they pass a new redistricting, but it does not comply with one man, one vote. And then, yet again, of course, the state is sued, and they lose again, and they are actually forced to redistrict at that time. It's kind of funny, we have this history with the federal courts that force us to do this the right way, yet here we are 40 years later, and we're still dorking around with this. I mean, our case set precedent, federal precedent. It's not like this is some new process to us. We were the ones that ended up causing the precedent to be set. So I'm hoping that we get some boundaries laid out, and we get them laid out relatively quickly, that they call this thing the special session, they call it, we get in and out in about a week, and we end up with a real redistricting plan that will hold up in court, and that is, I hope, at least representative of the state, that there's not a whole lot of gerrymandering going on. Oh, and I just realized I forgot to tell you all the phone numbers. If you want to call in about any of the topics tonight, you guys can. The number here is area code 858 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And if you call in, you can just listen to the show that way anytime you want. But if you want me to know that you want to talk, you have to press the 1 key when it tells you to. And that way I'll know that you want to speak to me about one of the topics we're talking about tonight. Just throwing that out there because in case you want to call in. There's been a number of health things in the news here over the past couple, 3 weeks. One of the things that's been on my agenda and I haven't reached in a few weeks because it's not the end of the world, but the Courier-Journal had an editorial in which they declared yet a new public health crisis. This new public health crisis, when you think public health crisis, what do you think? You think epidemic. You think debilitating horrible diseases that are going to kill you and people dying in the streets. I mean, that's an epidemic, a public health crisis. Right? Well, this public health crisis is dental decay. Now, certainly, you know, there are people that don't take as good a care of their teeth as they should. I've certainly got my own little issues with my teeth, but that's another story for another day. But I don't think these folks really understand. It seems like everything is now just labeled a public health crisis. And I don't know if people really understand what a public health crisis is anymore. It's kind of interesting. This is a public health crisis? I mean, really? Tooth decay. Man, you know, all these thousands of people dying in the street from tooth decay. That's silly. It's not a public health crisis. A crisis is an emergency, something devastating, something in your face and oh, this is not a crisis. It's a problem, maybe, but not a crisis. And, you know, I think this really all comes back to the smoking ban issue and some of these other issues where they declare public health crises. And they're not a public health crisis at all. It's not a crisis. You know, the smoking ban people, they never stop. I mean, we've been over this on the show. They have millions of dollars. They get Obama stimulus money. They've got PAC money, or not PAC money, but funding money from these trusts and organizations that are set up by groups. Some of them are owned by the companies that do tobacco cessation drugs, and others are just generic do-gooders, whatever. They get a lot of money to push this stuff. And so they declare everything a crisis, crisis, crisis. But the reality is that smoking is not a crisis. It's been around for how long now? It's nothing new. A public health crisis, a public health emergency is a polio outbreak or an outbreak of the plague. I'll take Spanish flu even. That's a public health crisis. People dying in the streets. That's a public health crisis. There was a story I saw this week, and actually I was called about it. It was from yesterday's Inquirer, and I think I was quoted in it, about how the average smoker spends over $2,000 a year on cigarettes. Dun, dun, dun. Okay. I bet the average smoker spends more than that in gas in a year. I mean, have you seen the price of gas? It's almost $4 a gallon. I didn't really understand. The reporter called me and asked me about it, and I didn't really understand why anybody cared. I mean, are they trying to say that, hey, we should, and everybody should know by now, I am a smoker. I've been fighting the smoking ban, not because I'm a smoker, but because of the business rights. Blah, blah, blah. We can go over that some other time. But is it, whose job is it to decide what I spend $2,000 a year on? And perhaps ironically, the reason it's $2,000 a year, heck, what I smoke, Kentucky's Best, is $3 a pack. About $1.20 of that is the price of the cigarettes, and $2 or so is the price of taxes That's the cost of the taxes they've put on these things. So the idea that there's something wrong with people spending this much money on cigarettes, well, the government's the one to put all the taxes on it to do that. And make no mistake, the government loves that tax money. They use that for everything. The smoker tax, the cigarette tax money is used for every stupid pet project under the sun. But the bigger question for me is, who cares? Why is it your business what I spend my money on? I mean, is this going to go to what we see in New York where you're not allowed to buy more than 16 ounces of a sugary drink at a time? I don't care. I'm an adult. I don't need you to tell me how to spend my money. I'm the one who makes my money. I'll decide how to spend it. Thank you very much. I don't even understand why this was a topic of discussion. Who cares? Again, I probably spend, I know I spend a whole lot more than $2,000 a year in gas. So what? I'm not going to tell you what to spend your $2,000 on. You sure as hell better not tell me what to spend mine on. It's my money. I earned it. I'll spend it any way I want to. Thank you very much. And there was another story I saw from the San Francisco Bay Guardian. And, you know, California was one of the early states and San Francisco one of the early areas to pass a smoking ban. And New York as well. New York was first, and then some folks in California did it. And because of all these smoking bans, it led to the rise of the electronic cigarettes, commonly known as e-cigs or vaporizers or inhalers. They're known by several things. I just call them e-cigarettes. There's now a push to ban e-cigarettes in some of these early areas that passed cigarette bans, tobacco smoking bans. And these bans were initially put into place ostensibly to protect the health of other people and the workers at these establishments. That's what they'll tell you, and they still use that reasoning. But the e-cigarettes don't have all the harmful, debatably harmful, secondhand output. They don't. The nicotine, it's pure nicotine shot. It goes into your lungs, and you breathe out water vapor. Right? Like, it's what you always breathe out, air and water vapor. And so we've seen this in Kentucky with the e-cigarettes being included in smoking bans, and it really doesn't make any sense. I mean, why? There's been no proven harm. And the reason that they give, if you ask a pro-nanny, pro-ban nanny, is, well, they look too much like the real thing. Oh, well, aren't I stupid? I guess we need to ban flour because it looks too much like cocaine. I mean, it's ridiculous. Just because something looks like something else doesn't mean it is something else. I mean, we just had this debate in Kentucky over industrial hemp versus marijuana. And those that were against it said, well, it looks too much like marijuana. It'd be too hard to enforce because the cops can't tell the difference. Really? I mean, you can't tell the difference between somebody busting down stalks of hemp and sending it to a processing plant to be used for fibrous materials, whether it's clothing or paper or whatever, and some dude rolling up a joint? And likewise, these e-cigarettes almost always don't really look like a cigarette. Because they have to be bigger, because they have a nicotine cartridge in them. And some of them look nothing like a cigarette at all. Some of them kind of do. But apparently the good ones, and I haven't used any cigarettes, so I don't know, but apparently the good ones are these ones that look like some crazy big contraption. They're like 6 to 8 inches long, and they're brown, and they've got different places. And apparently that gives you the most realistic feel of a drag of a cigarette. The cheap ones that look like a cigarette, still, as I said, they're bigger than a regular cigarette. I mean, so for the smokers out there, you guys know there's regular cigarettes and there's 100s, right? The 100s are longer. These would be like 200s. I mean, they're longer, they're fatter, they're bigger, and they're plastic. Oh, and the tip lights up green when you take a puff off of it. Because, you know, that green smoke, everybody knows about those green embers. They claim it looks the same. The reality is, on all this stuff, whether it's dental decay or trying to tell you how to spend your money or the e-cigarette bans or smoking bans or whatever, this has nothing to do with health. It has nothing to do with anything other than these folks are offended that you live a different lifestyle than they do. Offended. It offends them. And they think, oh, what a dumb person you are. So I will work to get a law passed to force you to do the smart thing. Well, here's the thing. I'm a legal adult and you are a legal adult. And I guarantee you that there are things that you do that I think are stupid. So rather than us creating a bunch of legislation to ban each other's activities, why don't we leave each other the hell alone? How about that? How about you do what you want to do and I'll do what I want to do and neither one of us forces the other one to play together. And, you know, we have our own little sandboxes. Let's all play nice by not playing together if we can't play together. Right? I don't understand why there are people that feel like it is their duty to impose their will on others. It just makes no sense to me whatsoever. I'm going to hit this real quick and then we're going to do a break. So the next topic I had up here is immigration. And I don't want to get into the big immigration debate. I just want to bring this up. And it kind of ties into this smoking issue and the laws and all that. There are unintended consequences to any law that is passed and any push that is made to try to curb activity, natural human activity. In the immigration fight, there's a bill being floated around, and as part of it, once again, we see the calls for a national ID card. Now, folks, you got to be very, very careful about this because a national ID card is a very dangerous thing. There's another time in history where national ID cards were required and you had to carry it around with you everywhere. I believe they used the phrase Papieren bitte, or papers please. There are unintended consequences to every law that is passed. A friend of mine ran for Congress, and he ran as a libertarian. This is some years back. And he's out collecting signatures. We've been over the whole disparity of signatures between Republicans and Democrats and everybody else. But he's out collecting signatures because he was running as something else. And a gentleman, he asked, said, hey, do you support building a fence on the border? And my buddy says, no, I don't. And the guy says, well, then I can't sign your petition. And my buddy says, hey, you know, here's the thing. They build a wall, the way things are going, I might want to get out. And the guy said, you know what, that's a good point. And he signed the petition. And that's exactly it. You build a border. Don't forget, walls work both ways. Ask the people of East Germany how keeping out the West worked out for them. We don't want the West invading East Germany. How'd that work out for the people in East Germany? Got to think about these things. There are better ways to solve the problems, and a lot of these problems are caused by our laws themselves. So if we can fix the problem with the existing law rather than compounding the problem with new additional laws, we're probably going to be better off for it. And we should be looking for ways to repeal the stupidity that has been built into the system rather than pile on and create new unintended consequences. And with that, I'm going to take a quick break here. We're at the bottom of the hour. Again, if you all want to call in about this or any of the other topics we talked about tonight, you can do so. The number here again is 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Better day. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. It is Sunday night. And if you're not listening to us live, if you're listening via podcast, you can listen to us live every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And getting right back to it here, last week we spent a lot of time talking about the NSA and the spying, and boy, there's some really interesting information that's come out since last week, and I wanted to hit that here for a bit. First, and probably most interesting and somewhat depressing, is a poll that shows that who supports this program depends on who's president. What? Basically, this poll shows that when Bush was in charge, Democrats overwhelmingly opposed this program of the NSA spying on the American public. But now that Obama's president, Democrats support it. Huh? It's the same program, people. Who's in charge doesn't really matter. And I think that that's something that's really interesting and also kind of sad that people don't really get it. Who's in charge of taking away your rights doesn't matter. And we talked about that last week a bit, but wow. I mean, the poll is amazing. The data that is shown is that in 2006, 61% of Democrats opposed the plan or opposed NSA spying. Fast forwarding now to 2010, 2011, that number has dropped to 34%. It's basically cut in half simply because Obama's in charge. Meanwhile, 22% of Republicans opposed it in 2006. Now, 47% support it. It's doubled. What? And of independents, it was 44% were for it in 2006. And now only 44% are against it. Guys, it's the same program. It's the same thing. How can you – you can't let your liberties go on the premise of, well, you know, it's our guy. So, you know, hey, whatever, man. You know, our guy will do okay with it. It could have been worse. That's the one – oh. I talked about that last week. I'm not going to get on that again. The point is, this poll shows just how stupid this is, that people are not thinking on principles. It's all about our team, our team, our team. Are you stupid? It's not about our team. It's about our rights. And we need to be steadfastly against the infringement of our rights. Meanwhile, there was a memo that was exposed from the NSA early on in the program, saying that they need to rethink how to approach the Fourth Amendment. Really? I don't know about that. I'm pretty sure the Fourth Amendment hasn't changed. Pretty sure it says the exact same thing it used to, and that there hasn't been a constitutional amendment since to change it. How are we rethinking or reframing the Fourth Amendment? It's pretty straightforward. And Pew Research has a poll, and I saw another poll, but the Pew Research poll said that most support the NSA spying, which is really depressing to me. I mean, really, folks, you want your government to spy on you? Really? Now, that poll was taken when it was supposedly only the metadata and all that stuff that that they weren't listening in on particulars or anything like that. It was just about metadata, and, you know, the courts have said this is okay, and there's a special court for it. It keeps it in check and balance. But now, The NSA has had to admit that it is listening to phone calls without warrants. And that should really give people pause for concern. Folks, there's a reason we have warrants. It's due process. Due process. It's critically important that we preserve due process. Our country was basically founded because of a lack of due process by the British government. That was the real rallying cry of the colonists. No taxation without representation, right? That's due process. The troops just storming in and demanding things from the colonists, the British troops. That was part of our due process protections. That's why you see these things written into our Constitution, because these were the infringements that governments were making on the people then, and it's the same infringements that they're making on us now. Meanwhile, there's been several lawsuits that have been filed to try to shed some light on what's going on here and to try to stop or reel in the NSA, and unfortunately, the Supreme Court has rejected a legal challenge to the secret surveillance based on standing, saying that while it would be difficult, if not impossible, to prove whether or not you are being spied on, you don't have standing in court to sue unless you can prove that you've been spied on and can prove that it is financially or in some way hurt you. How do you even prove that if you're not allowed to find out that you're being spied on to begin with, much less what the information is being used for? What an interesting catch-22 that is. And companies that want to try to stop doing this, well, according to another article I read on Yahoo, these companies have very few options to say no. They really don't have the option to say no. How do you say no to the NSA? How do you say no to the FBI? How do you say no to a government agency that comes in and says, we want this data? And you're not allowed to tell anybody we're getting this data. And you're not allowed to complain about that you're getting this data or that we want this data. How do you stop that? How do you fight that? You can't. And the Supreme Court rejected the ability to try to put a check and balance back into the system. It's a really, really bad precedent. But hey, don't worry. This is only during wartime, right? I mean, when it's war on terror, man, you know. It's only during wartime. This is a wartime thing. Don't worry. Well, I read another story that basically the war on terror has been declared a permanent war. That's going to last for at least another decade or two and probably permanent. And meanwhile, all the while, the U.S. military has granted itself authority by modifying regulations, administrative regulations. They've granted themselves authority over domestic disturbances. In other words, they're saying the military has the ability to operate domestically in civil matters, which has been a long-standing no-no. It's no wonder, and I saw a poll, and it's been this way for a long time, but it's moved back in the trend, the poll about the direction of the country. And right now, 59.4%, according to the Real Clear Politics aggregate, which I love to use Real Clear Politics for that because, you know, they take all these different polls and they average them together. The aggregate is 59.4% believe that the country is going the wrong way. It's no surprise to me. You know, Obama, when he ran for office, and a lot of people forget this because it's been, you know, 4 years. Actually, it's been 5 years now, over 5 years. But when he first ran for office in January of 2008, one of the things he promised was there would be no warrantless wiretaps. And the left, applaud, yay, no warrantless wiretaps. But now that Obama's in office and the wiretaps continue, that's like, oh, it's okay. Obama's in charge. It's okay. It's not okay. It doesn't matter who's in charge. And it's just another broken promise from Obama. And it was a story I read about the different problems in the Obama presidency, and I think we're all familiar with the big ones. I mean, the IRS scandal, and, well, I found out about this at the same time everybody else did on TV. Really? And a lot of comedians have really bashed, appropriately so, bashed Obama for saying such an asinine statement. Oh, I didn't know. I just saw it on TV like you did. Really? Why are you in charge then? I mean, really, why are you the boss? If you don't know what's going on, maybe we should put somebody in office that knows what's going on and is paying attention at least. And, of course, now we've got the Obamacare look-back period just about to kick in, and we've talked about that on the show, but that starts July 1st. And so we see employers cutting back hours. We see employers cutting back everything they can. And I've already complained to all of you in the past about how I'm very upset that I get to keep my health plan because it's considered a loophole in Obamacare, which I think is a joke. Whatever. I like my health care plan. It suits me and my family quite well, and I'm very upset that I'm not going to get to keep it. And it is going to raise my premium. And now there was a clip where Pelosi is saying, well, she doesn't remember saying that everyone would have a lower premium, but she did. She said everyone would have a lower premium because there'd be more people in the pools, thus lowering the cost for everyone. And that's not the case. Premiums are going up. Of course they're going up. And they'll try to tell you that, well, they would have went up more. And it's very hard to prove a negative. But certainly, anyone who has a brain realizes that more regulation means more cost. And those costs are not eaten by the medical providers. They're passed to us. Okay, well, great. Now everybody has insurance, so those costs go from us to the insurance company. Well, where does the insurance company get their money? From us. From our premiums. So, yeah, we've kicked the costs all the way down the line, but in the end, the person at the end of it is you and me. We're the ones who have to pay for it. All the while, the economy has continued to be horrible. Food stamps are at a record high. Over 23 million households now receive food stamps. It's over almost 48 million. It's almost 48 million people now on food stamps. Amazing. Absolutely amazing that, you know, it's no wonder everybody thinks things are going bad. Well, guess why? Because they are going bad. We are going the wrong direction. And that's not to say things would have been better under Romney. Not by a long shot. Not at all. I don't think Romney had any answers either, which is why he didn't get elected, because I don't think he convinced anyone that he had any answers. The best he had was, well, Obama's messing up, but I won't mess up. Oh, okay. What are you going to do? Well, I'm not going to mess up. Oh, sure, we've heard that before. Anyway. Speaking of the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court, through regulation, yet again, not a law, but a regulation where they get to write their own regulations, which I never understand how an agency can write its own regulations, but whatever, they have banned the protesting of the Supreme Court outside the Supreme Court. And the irony of it is they just heard a case and ruled the opposite way for things like Congress and legislative bodies and whatnot, that protesting elected officials is absolutely within the realm of the First Amendment. It is our right to protest when we don't like what's going on. But apparently that doesn't extend to when we don't like what the Supreme Court has done. Apparently we're not allowed to protest what they're doing. But everybody else, we can protest. I'm starting to really wonder, is this the biggest joke of a Supreme Court we've had in a long time or what? Ruling that we can't challenge a law unless we can prove that we're hurt by it, but we're not allowed to find out if we're hurt by it because it's against the law to find that out. What a joke. And now, we're not allowed to protest at the Supreme Court. We can protest anywhere else, but not there. It's interesting, these agencies that create their own rules. And while we're talking about runaway agencies and the runaway government, you know, one of the things that really is concerning to me is this new DNA database thing that's being pushed out of Washington, D.C. where they want to create a database of everyone's DNA. That's scary. I mean, think about it. They get your DNA. The Republicans force the electronic record stuff on medical. So you've got that electronic. You've got a DNA map. And you've got this metadata. Well, it's only metadata, not really. But the metadata and other data from these agencies collecting information about individuals. And think about what you could do with all that data. You could put it together and figure out if somebody's genetically predisposed to be a bad guy. And by bad guy, I use bad guy in quotes. A bad guy who is someone that's not going to go along with the program. Or maybe it is somebody predisposed to become a criminal. Whatever. I mean, if we're for preemptive war, are we for preemptive prosecution of crime? I mean, think about that. That's a scary, scary thought. And due process is straight out the window anymore. I mean, we're heading somewhere to something between Judge Dredd and whatever that movie was with, where they did the whole pre-crime thing. That's where we're heading. And I know it sounds kind of ridiculous, but dang gone. Folks, if you work in IT like I do, you kind of know all the power of this information. They've got your medical records, your DNA map, your personal activities and your patterns of behavior. My God, they can map out your life based on the aggregate, right? Well, people with this DNA and with this gene who have these medical conditions and these patterns of behavior are likely to do X, Y, Z. It can absolutely be done. Make no mistake. That can be done. That's the whole point of big data. And while there is a legitimate use in the private sector for big data that is not invasive to the individual and is not harmful to the individual, the rights of the individual, we're creating a system where we can absolutely be abused. And what's scariest about this DNA database thing that I really don't like, beyond all that, is the fact that these laws that are being passed to create this DNA database are all about being arrested. Not about being tried or convicted, but about being arrested. Well, folks, when you get a speeding ticket, technically you've been arrested. Oh, yeah. And then you're let go on your own recognizance to show up in court, right? It's on the show up the court date. This is your court date, and if you just want to pay, who cares? Here's your, you know, how you pay. But you've been arrested. Do you want your DNA to be collected from a traffic stop? Not to say that it would happen immediately or that it would ever happen, but it could. Wrongfully accused of a crime? Oh, well, your DNA is in a database forever, even though you didn't do anything wrong. I have a big problem with that. And it's very interesting because I saw this story a few weeks ago, and I've been meaning to get to it in the show for a while, but there's a big, well, not a big, but a controversy over why people who are anti-authoritarians, also known as libertarians, are diagnosed as mentally ill. And the health establishment, they really don't get this. I mean, just like the nannies, they don't understand my position on smoking bans. It's not that I want people to go out and smoke. It's that I want people to be allowed to choose what to do, even if that choice is a bad choice. Because it's my life, not theirs. I'm an adult. I am a human being and an individual. I can make a decision that hurts me. You can make a decision that hurts you. And so long as you're not doing anything to physically harm or to economically harm me, I really don't care what you do. Now, if you're my friend, I'm going to tell you, hey, man, you sure you want to do that? I mean, yeah. And that's what I do as a friend. But I don't look to pass a law to prevent you from doing that. And that's what they don't get. These nannies don't understand that mindset at all. And they really believe that it is a mental illness to believe in the power of the individual and to question authority. And it's amazing. Amazing that these people that were the hippies in the 60s and the 70s are now the ones in charge and are the ones questioning the sanity behind questioning authority, the very thing they were talking about in the 60s and 70s. But now that they're the authority, Well, questioning authority is stupid, apparently. What a ridiculous thing. And I saw a poll, and this is a little bit old, 2011. The libertarians, people who self-identify as libertarians, at the time in 2011, made up about 10% of the voting public, or I'm sorry, the general public. And libertarians, they claim, I saw another story here, and there's been a couple of stories in Salon Magazine, smacking libertarians around, claiming it's a call and a small thing and whatever. But you know what? If you bust down the political divisions in this country, everybody's at about 10%. I'm not kidding. 10%, 10%, 10%, 10%. And the major parties, Republicans and Democrats, are coalitions of those 10%, 10%, 10%. Staunch conservatives are 9%. Main Street Republican, right? Those are your moderate Republicans, are 11%. Libertarians, 10%. Disaffecteds, 11%. Postmoderns, they're moderate but liberal on social issues, which, by the way, are almost libertarians anyway, 13%. New coalition Democrats, 10%. Hard-pressed Democrats, the ones that are religious, financially struggling, those are your Southern Democrats, are 13% of the population. And hardcore-style liberals is 14%. And the bystanders, the ones that do nothing, they are 10%. So it's basically a whole bunch of 10%, 10%, 10%. But somehow, libertarianism is a cult. What? No. It's not a cult. Like any of these groups, there are the ones that you're like, oh, you know, when you hear them, somebody talk and they're like, well, I'm part of this group, and you're a part of that group, you hide your face and you shake your head and why does this person have a microphone? Those people exist in every one of those groups, every single one. But libertarians are just as legitimate as any of those groups. We're just different. We're different than the staunch conservatives or the solid liberals, which are the two groups that get the most attention, certainly. But libertarians are their own thing, and we're growing, and there are more of us. And it's driven by the fact that conservatives and liberals act just silly. And they themselves are pushing those Main Street Republicans. Right, the staunch conservatives are pushing the Main Street Republicans. The Main Street Republicans are pushing the staunch conservatives. Those are the ones that are pushing each other around, and a lot of those folks get tired of being pushed around internally. Likewise in the Democratic Party, and that's what we see here in Kentucky. A lot of old Democrats in Kentucky know that they're not these very liberal Democrats in D.C., and they know they're not Republicans, and so they go looking, and they find libertarians. And they like what libertarians have to say. That's why libertarianism is growing. It's not a cult. It's a different way. And that's what everybody wants now, is a different way. Do you want more of what we've got? Yeah, it's been great the last 12 years, right? Woo-hoo! Super. Yeah, not so much. Republicans and Democrats have dropped the ball. Period. I want to know if there's anybody out there, and sadly we're about out of time for tonight, but hey, drop me a line on Facebook, whatever. If you really think that Republicans and Democrats are doing a great, stellar job, and I'm not talking about individuals, but I mean as the aggregate group, the stellar job, you tell me, send me a message, tell me, how do you defend the Republican Party or the Democratic Party and what they've been doing? Because both have been in charge at some point, complete control at some point, in the last 12 years. And they've both dropped the ball. Folks, that's another edition of Liberty Brattles in the books. Thanks for tuning in. Tune in again next week, 7 p.m., same time. And until then, have a good week. Have a good night.